Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Gail Seiler, and I'm here with my co-host, Greta Anderson. Hello, Greta.
Hello, Gail.
It's been a while since we've been co-hosting. So.
I know. It's good to be back in the studio with you.
Yeah.
We've got several interesting segments today. Later in the show, we'll be hearing live music from singer-songwriter Paul Doffing, who is returning to the area for a few performances over the weekend after being on the road for quite a while.
We'll look forward to that. And the Ames Progressive Alliance will be here for their monthly segment. This time they'll be talking about local efforts around controlling gun violence and updating us on other initiatives that they're working on. There's been a lot going on in the news this week and even overnight, but one thing that Local Talk does is try to make big issues local. And that's what we're going to be doing in this session. And we're also going to be talking about Representative Steve King's efforts to block the U.S. Treasury Department from putting Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill. As you may recall, the Treasury Department announced in April that it would move the image of Jackson to the back of the $20 note, replacing him with Harriet Tubman, a former slave who helped other slaves and fought in other ways against slavery. Representative King from the 4th Congressional District in Iowa, so he's the representative for much of the KHOI listening area.
Including Ames,
introduced an amendment that would block this change. Essentially, it would bar the Treasury Department from spending any funds to redesign currency. If approved, the language would nullify the Treasury's plans to change the $20 bill. At this time, it doesn't look like this proposed amendment will go anywhere. The House Rules Committee denied floor consideration of the amendment on Tuesday night, but we thought it was important to talk about it, especially because it was proposed by our representative. We contacted Representative King's office, but they did not respond to our request for comment. We reached out to Kim Weaver, who is the Democratic challenger for the House seat from Iowa's 4th Congressional District, the seat now held by Steve King. And we've been joined by Kim Weaver on the phone. Thanks for speaking with us today. We wanted to get your reaction to this attempt by Steve King to block the change in the $20 bill.
Well, you know, like many of the things he says, the first reaction was, wow. When I told my son, I said, guess what Steve King did? And he said, what? And I told him, he said, well, of course he did. It's just another example of the lack of focus on things that really matter to people in the 4th District. Harriet Tubman is an American hero. And his blocking, or attempting to block, because it did not succeed, is just an example of how out of touch he is with reality, to be honest. People of the 4th District care about water quality. We care about how we're going to pay to send our kids to college. We care about how seniors are going to pay for their prescription medication. And instead of focusing on those things, he does this.
I heard one political commentator on another radio show look at it as Steve King kind of focuses more on public displays rather than substantive issues. Would you agree with that?
Oh, most definitely. I can't think of an actual substantive issue that he has focused on. As a matter of fact, he's ranked as the least effective member of Congress. The least. Not one of, but the least effective member of Congress. And that says a lot. And I think the people of the 4th District definitely deserve to have better representation in D.C.
What do you see besides this contrast between substantive issues and a kind of grandstanding approach to politics? Are the key issues that would distinguish you in your campaign to unseat Representative King?
One of the things that I've been focusing on while I've been on the campaign trail is a plan that I've developed called iGive, Generating Investment Through Volunteer Engagement. And it's a proposal to address the burdening student loan debt that new grads have, where we would have a volunteer program that people could volunteer 4 hours a week in their community and have their student loan payments and interest deferred. And then at the end of the year, when they do their taxes, they turn in their hours and have a portion of their student loan debt forgiven. Issues like that definitely set me apart from Steve K. I'm a solution facilitator. That's what I do in my job. Even though my job description says I investigate complaints, really what I do is I find solutions. And that's the main difference. It's a night and day difference between what I want to do for the people of the 4th District and the, you know, political grandstanding Steve King does.
On your website, it highlights the phrase standing up for Iowa values. Could you say a bit about what that means to you?
Certainly. I was born and raised in Iowa. My great-great-grandmother came over from Norway and settled in Story City and eventually went to South Dakota. I was taught that people matter. I was taught that your neighbors matter and that all individuals in your community matter and that it's important to support people. And to me, that is an Iowa value, not keeping undocumented immigrants out. That's not an Iowa value. Making fun of people, that is not an Iowa value. So that's how we see Iowa values is taking care of each other.
Thanks very much for talking with us. We may be getting back in contact with you as we get closer to the election, because we'd love to have people have the opportunity to hear more about the candidates for this important election.
I would love to. Please let me know anytime, and I'll be happy to speak with you.
Okay. That was Kim Weaver, the Democratic candidate for Iowa's 4th Congressional District, attempting to unseat the current representative, Steve King. And we were talking today mainly about Representative King's attempt, unsuccessful attempt, to block the change to put Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill. And we've been joined in the studio now by members of the Ames Progressive Alliance. We have Victoria Sapinski and Ann Kinzel. Thanks for being here for your monthly segment, which is always interesting and informative. And today the topic is very timely in light of the recent shootings in Orlando and the sit-in in Congress this week trying to get some action on gun control at the federal level. But you're going to be talking about local efforts, and you've brought a guest, so I'm going to let you introduce that guest and take it from there.
Well, thank you. The month goes by quickly, and we welcome this opportunity to give a little update on what the Ames Progressive Alliance has been doing over the last month, what we have coming up, and also take the opportunity to introduce a guest. And today I want to move to our guest quickly. Today we have joining us Jess Calhoun, who is a member of the Ames Progressive Alliance, I'll say a very active member, and also a very active member of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. Jess is a transplant to our community, and we're very fortunate to have her. She's lived in California. She lived in England. We've already had our discussion, our condolences about Brexit. She is a nurse and also the mother of three small children. So welcome, Jess, and we're so glad to have you here to talk about, as a gun sense advocate in the Ames Progressive and an Ames Progressive Alliance member. Happy to have you on the show today. With your help, we're going to learn more about the group Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, the Iowa chapter. And we're also going to learn what we can do in Ames and in Iowa to help reduce gun violence, and I'll turn it over to you and ask if you can start us off by telling us what this organization, why don't you take the mouthful there?
Sure. That's quite a mouthful of a name. Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. Do you have to say that every time you talk to somebody?
I've shortened it just to moms. There I you just go. Say moms.
Moms. That's pretty universal. So, Jess, thanks again for being here today. Can you tell us a little bit about Moms? When was the organization founded?
Sure. So first, I just want to thank KHOI for hosting us and the Ames Progressive Alliance for inviting us to come on this great segment. I've been really looking forward to this conversation. So Moms Demand Action is a nonpartisan grassroots movement, and we're fighting for common sense gun laws to protect our children, but also to protect our communities. We were founded by a stay-at-home mom on the day after Sandy Hook. That was December 14th, was the shootings at Sandy Hook Elementary, and we were founded the day after. It started off as a Facebook page by this stay-at-home mom who at the time was in Indiana, and within a couple of years, now we are at the point where we have chapters in all 50 states, and we have over 3 million members nationally. So it has grown exponentially. Here in Iowa, we have very active groups in Ames, in Des Moines, a great group in Iowa City, and we have a group starting up in Decorah. And we're really kind of expanding so rapidly across the state. I think the best comparison that I've heard that sort of describes the group to people is a comparison to Mothers Against Drunk Driving. So I'm sure you all remember back in the 80s, this was a group that was very influential. They really led the way in changing the way we think about drunk driving and changing our culture around it and changing our laws around it. So we're essentially trying to do the same thing about gun laws.
So you said there's chapters throughout the state. How many people, moms, and I presume some dads, are involved in Iowa with your organization?
Well, I don't have the most recent number, but I do know that we have over 2,000 active volunteers, which means people who've signed up for an action or they've come to an event. My understanding is the number is actually quite larger because there are more people who've been involved in national activities. People are coming to us every single day, coming off the woodwork saying, I need to do something. I want to get involved.
What brought you into the organization, Jess?
Well, I mean, to be honest, this has always been an issue that's been of concern to me. This has always been something that's been on my radar. I'm a registered nurse, and my first job coming out of nursing school was on a surgical floor, and we would get trauma patients, and from time to time we would get patients who had been shot, usually younger men involved in gangs who had multiple gunshot wounds to their chest or abdomen, and these individuals suffered so much both emotionally and physically that it was very affecting for me as a young nurse, and many of them had to stay a very long time, had multiple surgeries, and had lots of lasting effects. So that was a very early experience that brought me to the issue. But what brought me to activism on the issue was definitely Sandy Hook, the shootings in Newtown, Connecticut, because I think the place I was at in my life at the time, I had young children. My oldest was probably maybe just a few years younger than those first graders. And I just could not wrap my head around what had happened to those kids and what they must have gone through. And I just felt like, this is it. I have to act. I have to do something.
Lots of Americans are very concerned about guns. And I think that it's always been in my lifetime one of the hot political buttons in America. If you want to stimulate a difficult conversation, bring up guns. But a lot of people use the phrase gun control. When I listen to moms, and I have to make a disclaimer here, I also consider myself part of moms, I hear the phrase gun sense. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about what's the difference between gun control and gun sense?
That's a great question. I think that gun control implies that we're anti-gun, and we're certainly not anti-gun. All of our solutions respect the Second Amendment. What we are is we're trying to foster a sense of responsible action around guns. What does that mean? It means keeping guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them. It means if you are a gun owner, store your guns responsibly. Make sure that they stay out of the wrong hands. The wrong hands, these are people who are criminals, children are certainly the wrong hands. Mm-hmm. So store your guns so that kids don't have access to them. We have a situation in our country where it's far too easy to get your hands on a gun. And that's what Gun Sense is about. It's about changing that.
Well, as the Ames Progressive Alliance's mission states, leveraging local resources, I want to sort of go back to what you, or go further on what you just talked about, on what we can do locally, what kind of ordinances perhaps exist in other communities. Can we speak about that a little bit?
Absolutely. Certainly, you know, mayors, law enforcement, local government, community leaders have actually really been at the forefront on this issue. Cities are the ones who are dealing every single day with this, especially larger cities where gun violence is a huge problem. And they're not waiting for Washington, D.C. to come in and fix this problem because they've seen the dysfunction there. So there are actually a number of things that cities are trying. Interestingly, Every Town for Gun Safety, which Moms Demand Action is a part of, along with Mayors Against Illegal Guns, they just issued a report last week about this very issue, about what cities can do. And you can find this report on their website, by the way. But what they looked at our largest cities. They looked at the 25 largest cities in our country. And what they found was that actually the levels of non-gun homicides were not that different across the board. But the levels of gun homicides were radically different. So there's something going on. There's something different going on in different cities. And that has a lot to do with who is committing those homicides and how they obtained their guns. And then what policies or law enforcement policies were in place to prevent them from doing so. So what we know, and this is true in big cities or even cities as small as Ames, is that much of gun violence is committed by people who are what we call prohibited buyers. So these are people who would not have passed a background check, but they find ways to get their hands on guns anyway. So a basic step that this report recommends, which I think really can apply to every city, is that we should be tracing all crime guns. We should, we should look at where these guns are coming from so that we can understand the problem a little bit better. Currently, there are 11 states that where it's state law to trace firearms that are used in homicides. Iowa is not one of those states. Illinois is, I believe California is, and then a bunch of states along the East Coast are as well. So that's the first step. We hear a lot about gun violence in Chicago. We always hear about Chicago. But what we don't hear about, and this was interesting to read about in the report, is that in 2014, the Office of the Mayor of Chicago issued an analysis of the city's trace data. And they guess what they found? They found that 60%, so a majority of the guns that are recovered in crimes in Chicago, come from out of state. They mainly come from Indiana. They come from as far as Mississippi. But they all come from states with lax, weak gun laws. And we see this happening in New York. A majority of them come down from what they call the Iron Pipeline, the I-95 corridor. They get shipped up in cars from Georgia, and they come into the city of New York. Same is true for Boston. So the other thing that they found, and this is where it applies to cities, I think, a little bit more, is that 20% of the guns that were recovered in Chicago crime scenes came from just four gun dealers, four shops. Three of them were in the suburbs, and one was actually a store in Indiana that were identified as, so one in five guns. So once you have that data as a city, this indicates that maybe you have a problem. And so a lot of cities are looking at taking a variety of enforcement or educational measures to try to force gun dealers who maybe are bad apples to adopt more responsible practices in their city. So that's a big one.
So you're talking about regulation and regulation at the seller level. Now, in some dialogue or pseudo-dialogue that we hear, what we hear is that people want to confiscate people's guns. Now, is that part of gun sense?
No, absolutely not. This is not about confiscation. This is about changing the way we store our guns and the way we sell our guns. And this actually raises another issue. Stolen guns are a huge way that guns end up in the wrong hands, or they end up in illegal markets. So particularly, I guess, guns stored in cars, firearms stored in cars. Cars get broken into, the gun gets stolen, and that gun then later ends up at a crime scene a month or two later. This is a big issue in a lot of major cities. So Oakland, the city of Oakland, where I lived for a few years and worked, and I know it well, the city council approved a measure that makes it a crime to leave your gun unattended in a car in a public place. So Another measure that cities are adopting is requiring that if you're a gun owner and you lose your firearm, sure, you lose your firearm or get stolen, but report it. Report it within 24 or 48 hours. And that timely reporting actually makes a big difference in what law enforcement can do to retrieve that gun and make sure it doesn't end up in the wrong hands. So this isn't about confiscating guns. This is about taking the system that we already have and making the things that we're doing more responsible. And I have to say, too, that I think the majority of gun owners are behaving very responsibly. This is about just encouraging everyone to sort of adopt those safe storage practices so that we are not contributing to the problem of gun violence as individuals.
But these are ordinances that we could be looking at in Ames that I'm assuming we don't have in place currently that speak to not having guns in cars, for example, also encouraging or regulating safe storage. And you and I have also talked about other small things that are happening in other communities. And something that I saw, I believe it was in the Chicago area, decals on all the shop and restaurant doors with the gun and the slash line through it. And for me, it was very impactful. It said a lot. It was small, but it meant people were all thinking about that many people are carrying guns and please don't come into my place of business.
Yeah.
And I noticed the ones that didn't have the decals.
Right. So. Right. And certainly the measures that I've talked about already today are not things that we have seen yet in Iowa. These are things that we're seeing them in California. We're seeing actually Pennsylvania is leading the way on, I think there are 12 municipalities in Pennsylvania that have these. You must report your firearm if it's lost or stolen. So this has not come to Iowa yet. Short of a city council passing these, I guess what I'd like to encourage is that just gun owners start acting as individuals and that we all try to do these things. What you're talking about seeing in Chicago, I was just in Iowa City last week, and I again noticed these decals on city property, where I believe it was in 2001, Iowa City passed, in response to some of the changes in Iowa's gun permitting laws, passed an ordinance that on city property there cannot be firearms. So at the Iowa City parking garages, you'll see these signs, Iowa City Public Library. I know other cities have tried recently, other Iowa cities have tried recently to pass these and have come to a lot of opposition from Iowa gun owners and some of the more extremist gun groups in Iowa. I know North Liberty tried to pass one of these ordinances last year, and they were not successful in doing so.
Well, it might be something that the Ames Progressive Alliance wants to bring to the table and encourage particular new thinking about what we do at a community level.
Jess, like you, I come from California, and one of the things that's always been a blessing about living in Iowa as a former Fresnan is the low level of gun violence. I no longer hear the popping off of semi-automatic weapons on Friday night. Mm-hmm. I still know it's Friday, so it's okay. But what I want to know is here in Iowa, we still have tragedies. This very week, we read in the Des Moines Register that a child accidentally shot himself with a gun. Mm-hmm. Deconstructing that sentence, I still don't understand how children accidentally shoot themselves with guns. It sounds like you're living in a parallel universe. So tell me a little bit about how we moms and others can influence the culture in our state so that we simply do not hear the words anymore. Mm-hmm. A child accidentally shot himself, a six-year-old child, with a gun.
Absolutely. That's right. And this is not, these incidents are never accidents. We like to use the word unintentional shootings, but it should never be called an accident. Because ultimately, we as adults, we are responsible for making sure that this doesn't happen, that children do not have access to firearms. My organization, Moms Demand Action, has actually, this is one of our areas where we've been most active. on this educational piece around safe storage, we have a campaign called Be Smart, which is really focused on child access prevention. We go out to schools, we go to PTAs, PTOs, book clubs, Rotary clubs, you name it. If we will go, we will be there and talk to you about this, because this is an absolute tragedy. We have 8 children a day who are shot and killed, and there are they are 100% preventable. We in our country we have over 3 million homes where guns are not stored, or where there are unsecured guns. And that needs to change. So what we're advocating for are, if you know, you have, particularly if you have a child or a teenager at home, store your gun in a gun safe or use an approved trigger lock. This does not affect anyone's rights. This is just about being a responsible gun owner.
Well, it would certainly affect the rights of children to live in a society mm-hmm. where we don't hear the words child shoots self accidentally with a gun. Earlier, Jess, you mentioned something briefly about what mayors could do in communities. Can you tell us a little bit about the opportunities for mayors to interject some gun sense at the community level, including Ames?
Absolutely. So I would encourage everyone to check out Mayors Against Illegal Guns. This is a group that Moms has partnered with as part of Everytown. What it does is it provides a toolkit. It provides resources for mayors from other cities, large and small. Mayor County of Des Moines is a member of Mayors Against Illegal Guns, and it gives them a toolkit to sort of address problems and look at what other cities have done. So I would encourage everyone to take a look at that. And like I said, it's small towns, larger towns. Michael Bloomberg was a founder of this, and he certainly had similar challenges to, say, what Chicago or Des Moines are facing in terms of gun violence, in that he had a city where there was a very high gun homicide rate, but lots of guns flowing in from out of state. And I think that it's frustrating, because there's only so much that you can do at the local level when you have this porous market and you have states where there are very lax gun laws. But some of the things I mentioned earlier, these are actions that cities are taking. And until our federal government, until Congress decides that they're going to take action on this issue and that we're actually going to have universal background checks, this is what the options that we're left with.
Well, the last time I looked at the Mayor Bloomberg's site, there were 600 mayors that had signed on, mm-hmm. Several communities in Iowa. I would like to see Ames join that list, because even if it doesn't do anything immediately, every little bit adds a message. And I think also you've covered a few things that we can do locally. Mm-hmm. There are some opportunities there, so let's focus on those. And we're going to break.
This is Local Talk on KHOI, Community Radio for the Heart of Iowa. We're hearing from the Ames Progressive Alliance, and we're talking about gun sense in Iowa. So let's get back to that.
One of the things I want to compliment moms about, and also Everytown, is that we're having this conversation, like many other places in the nation, right after another slaughter in our country. But this is an ongoing conversation for moms every day, and I have to compliment you on that. And I hope that also we'll take the opportunity, that we'll have a lot of opportunities when not something huge has happened, where we'll continue to talk about this.
You know, what I hear a lot is the gun lobby likes mm-hmm. to throw up reasons why gun slaughter happens in America. They sort of throw it like something on the wall, waiting to see what might stick, instead of really having a significant conversation about how guns are available in our society in ways that are detrimental to so many of us. So one of the things they've thrown up on the wall to see if it'll stick is they say we have a mental health problem. We don't have a gun problem. We know that Iowa has a shortage of mental health professionals. What's the mom's take on this latest defense that we have a mental health problem?
Yeah, I mean, this has been one that's been thrown around a lot. I think that people, I hear a lot that people think this is an impossible issue, that this is something where the gun lobby is so entrenched. And yeah, you know, they have a 30-year head start. But I really think that this year, 2016, is going to be the year of gun safety. When people, when regular people start hearing these refrains that you've mentioned from the gun lobby, and they start saying, this doesn't make sense to me. For the first time this year, we have national candidates that are actually, this is part of their platform, and we're talking about this on a regular basis. And we're not just talking about when there's a horrible mass shooting. It's coming up in between as well. And I think that they're bringing it up, not just because it's the right thing to do, but because it's actually becoming a winning issue. And I think that the tired refrains of this is a problem of, you know, that this is just mental health, or this is that we don't actually have enough guns. If we had more guns, we could counter the guns we already have. I think that these refrains are becoming tired. And that in itself is like a sea change in gun politics. This used to be the third rail. You couldn't touch this issue two election cycles ago. So I guess my message for anyone listening today would be, if you care about this, now is the time to get involved. You know, this is really the moment where I think we can make a difference on this issue. And change is small. Change may be incremental. But we're talking about 32,000 lives a year. I think incremental change, even on that number, is so significant, and that every one of those lives is worth fighting for.
We can be looking also at our state legislature and encouraging people to support activities that are going on there. Is there something that we can be doing to encourage more activity?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for asking that. Here at the state level, our efforts have really been focused on pushing back against these efforts to weaken our gun laws by the gun lobby. And so some of the things that we've really fought against that that we need help fighting are the Stand Your Ground bills that come through the state house. Every year they reintroduce it and it doesn't get anywhere, but we still need to present an opposition to this. Missouri, unfortunately, just passed Stand Your Ground. It was the first state since the death of Trayvon Martin to do so, and that's why we cannot be complacent in thinking that these laws are not going to move forward. In 2015, this was not this last legislative session, but the year before, we successfully beat back legislation that would have essentially ended our expanded background checks that we have in Iowa on private handgun sales. And we fought that, and it did not move forward, fortunately. What we need people. We need numbers. We need people calling. We need people emailing their legislators. We have had two lobby days now. These 2 years that we've been active at the State House, we've held two lobby days, and we need people to get out and show up and talk to their legislators, talk with the press about why this matters to us. So the best way to kind of know what's going on and where we need you is to first visit our website, momsdemandaction.org, and then follow our Iowa State chapter Facebook page. Yes. MomsDemandAction-IA is what you can search for on Facebook. And that's where we will keep you informed about what's happening January through April at the State House, and where your voice really matters the most. Being a member and joining us isn't a huge time commitment. It's just like sending an occasional email or making an occasional call.
It's a very well-managed Facebook page, and I really appreciate the updates that are on there. I encourage others to like it, join it.
It's a great page. But before we stop today, I have to ask Jess a question.
Oh.
And it has to do with moms and activism. And I had never heard this term before I became acquainted with moms. And that's the activist toolbook tactic of the stroller jam. So can you please tell our audience, what is a stroller jam?
Oh, my goodness. So a stroller jam, we did this in 2015 when we were working on the expanded background check bill that I just spoke about. But we show up with our strollers. In my case, at the time, I had twins in a wagon. And we filled the rotunda with our strollers. And part of this is just, it's just a matter of necessity, because we want to be there and we have our children with us, and so we bring them along. But it also creates quite a presence. So, but I'd also like to to emphasize that we're not just moms. We are dads. We are grandparents. We are people without children. We're starting to bring new people into the process that aren't just moms, but that's part of our culture, and Stroller Jams certainly certainly reflect that.
Well, hey, I'm ready to take up the granny jam.
Awesome. <That's> great.
Well, Jess, you've been a great guest today, and thank you so much. And we
thank
will
you.
Definitely continue this conversation. I also wanted to mention that Moms has a table at the downtown
yes.
farmers market. I know I'm going to be sitting at it tomorrow, and that is every Saturday, correct?
Well, it's actually just this Saturday.
Then everybody should come tomorrow.
Yeah, come tomorrow. But I believe we will be back later in the summer. I'm just not sure what the dates are.
Okay. Tomorrow's the day. Also, just a quick update as we finish up our time allotment here about what the Ames Progressive Alliance is up to. The city council recently unanimously supported, with the alliance's encouragement and the city manager's recommendation, that Ames participate in the Department of Energy Soul Smart program. This is a program that offers advisors who are knowledgeable in all aspects of solar energy. They offer their expertise at no cost to the city. I also understand that the Ames Tribune will be doing a story on this shortly. Our next event, the Outreach Committee of the Progressive Alliance, is planning monthly gatherings, which will focus on a variety of issues. Our next one is at Torrent Brewery on July 14th at 7 p.m. There will be more information and reminders on our Facebook page, which is Ames Progressive Alliance. So please also join us and like us after you visit the Moms Demand Action. So thank you so much.
All right, everybody. Be sure to practice some gun sense out there.
Thank you very much for being here, Ames Progressive Alliance. And again, bringing us a really timely topic, but helping us to think about it locally. We're going to take a musical break before we move on to our next segment.
I still smile when I see the sunshine, and I still laugh when I hear the sound of the great conversation as we make our way. Today's not yesterday, the past is over, and now it's today. Today is mine. Can stop. We can't when we see the madness. Yeah, we can rise. We will not degrade. We cannot ignore the signs of our time. We won't let our children bleed on the vine. This is our duty. This is our time. Today is mine. Will they still smile if hunger controls them? Will they still have a way to be free? We're choosing it for them because we won't see the fires of the change in the sea. And what will we leave as our legacy? This is our time, and I won't stop. I will not be silent. No, I won't hold my tongue in my throat. This symptom of silence that ties our hands as oil tycoons plow through our land.
And that was Paul Doffing. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you're listening to Local Talk. I'm Greta Anderson, and I'm here with my co-host, Gail Seiler. That song we just heard was by Paul Doffing, and magically, Paul appeared in the studio just as we played that song. Welcome, Paul.
Hey, how's it going?
It's great. And Paul is a singer-songwriter who lived in Ames for a couple of years. And then you took off, and I don't even know where you headed, but I'm assuming that you did so on a bicycle.
Truth. Yeah, I did do it on a bicycle. Do you want the short synopsis of what's happened?
Please
okay.
do.
The short synopsis is...
Because we miss you.
Yeah, I miss Ames. It's really nice to be back, actually. Feels familiar, and there's so many people I know well here, so it's great. I left on a bike in the beginning of June last year, and biked around Iowa and Minnesota and up like through Duluth along the south side of Lake Superior.
And beautiful, then, beautiful place.
Oh. Yeah, and that, yeah, it's an incredible, incredible place. Lake Superior is the best place, I think. That's why they call it Superior, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's right in the name. But people don't notice that, I think. There's not. There are more tourists by Lake Michigan, and it's like, that doesn't have a Superior name. But anyway, yeah, and then we biked down Lake Michigan and around the bottom and up to Chicago and then down through Illinois, across Tennessee, out to North Carolina, and then worked on a farm over the winter, a little vegetable farm, and then biked up to Washington, D.C. And, yeah, in the course of all that, played like about maybe 50 concerts, about something like that, and then came back here because we're going to Europe to play music starting on July 2nd. And
okay, yeah. You're using the
yes.
plural pronoun.
Yes, Jen Tillman was a grad student here and a friend of mine who's still biking with me and helping with the trip and stuff.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you are just a roving musician.
Basically, yes. Yes.
And you, as we were preparing for this segment, you were assembling your guitar.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty amazing to watch.
Yeah, there's this company called Journey Instruments that I had been kind of like looking for a guitar that was more useful to me. I have to bring a trailer to bring a regular size guitar, and playing like is the main priority of my trip, not really just biking. So I want to have like a decent guitar. And this is a collapsible guitar. You can see it on their website if you are interested in this. But yeah, the guitar, you can just like fold it in half and put it into a little bag. You take the neck right off of it, basically.
I know. We'll take a picture of you disassembling the guitar.
Totally, yeah. I would love it.
And then put that on our website so people can really see what this is all about.
That sounds awesome. Let's do that. Yeah.
And the purpose of your being here right now is that you have a show at DG's tomorrow night, Saturday night, and then you're going to be playing at the Des Moines Arts Festival on Sunday.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I also have a show tonight.
Oh,
in Ames.
You filled one in.
Yeah, I have a house show tonight at 8 p.m. And, like, it's kind of the south part, like, south of campus. There's someone hosting a house show over there.
So now you're making everybody jealous because, you know, they're not invited.
You're invited.
Oh, they're invited.
Totally, yeah. This one's actually open to the public. The address is 400 Pearson Avenue, and it starts at 8. And I don't know if you really need any other information.
400 Pearson Avenue.
Yeah, yeah, yep, exactly. And it's $15 suggested donation, so don't come if you don't have any money. I'm just joking. You can come if you don't have any money. That's why it's a suggested donation. Yeah.
Just a suggestion.
Just a suggestion. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we want to hear a song.
All right, want to hear a song first. All right. Sounds good. Well, yeah, then I'll play a song. Had a request for a newer song. This is one of my newest songs. It's also one of my fastest songs. It might be kind of the morning version of the song. It might be a little slow. But this is called The Fragile Modern Day.
my part, you did yours too. It's different now, you know it's true. We can't go back, but where can we go to? Angry words like bullets fly, and I can't be the first to die, but I can't find a way to flee the fight. Before we give up on each other, there's something I have to say. It's hard to live in the fragile modern day. So keep the weight of your judgment light, okay? It's hard to live in the fragile modern day. Did my part, you did yours too. It's different now, you know it's true. We can't go back, but where can we go to? Sweaty fingers on metal guns, the fighter jets, the countless bombs. You'd think we would have found a better way. Before we give up on each other, there's something I have to say. It's hard to live in the fragile modern day. So keep the weight of your judgment light, okay? Oh, it's hard to live in the fragile modern day.
Paul Doffing.
Yeah.
That was fabulous.
Thank you.
I was going to say, you know, before we launched into the song, you know, that you're, I really admire how your music is so in tune with your activism. It's all sort of part of a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, once you start, you can't get away from it, I think. Once you start caring about people and trying to, like, make a difference in the world, or at least try to make at least the difference that you can make, then it's like, well, I better make this my whole life, or I'm going to feel like I didn't do what I could.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you're traveling around by your own leg power, how do you – where do you sleep at night? What do you – how do you make all those arrangements?
Huh. Yeah, it's an excellent question. There's a big mix of ways that it happens. Sometimes things are arranged in advance. Well, always the shows are pretty much arranged in advance. Very rarely does a show happen that's not pre-booked. But it's kind of that's kind of like the rough backdrop over which everything else kind of has to happen by, you know. So we book on a certain basis. So like once every so many shows a month is generally what we shoot for. Maybe like 7 or 8 shows a month. And then we bike about 30 to 40 miles a day most days. But with, you know, like 100 pounds of stuff
right.
on the bike.
I'm assuming that includes a tent.
A tent? Oh, yeah, tent, cook kit. Yeah, it's the whole thing. If you didn't cook your own food and you know, be able to camp really cheaply, it would totally not work.
Right.
Financially, you know, it's like just too much time out there. If you, like, stayed in hotels, it would just be, like, not with indie music money, at least.
Right.
Couldn't do it. But so basically camping and staying with people. There's a lot of different, like, networks through the internet now that, like, connect people and... So staying with, like, a lot of strangers, really, and, like, really, like, getting to know people and hang out with people. There's a lot of stuff about it that's like really a gift, I think, that like not a lot of people get to have. And also you end up in touch with some really, like, frankly, astonishingly weird people.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, just like people you wouldn't normally meet, you meet, and you end up hanging out with them, and it's really cool. I mean, in the end. But at first, it's like, wow, this isn't the kind of person I normally hang out with. But I am, you know.
Give me one example.
That's actually kind of what that last song
oh,
is
really?
Actually about.
I
mean, yeah, I was not trying to segue there, but yeah, just that, like, your sort of notions of who someone is or like what they're about might be inaccurate, and you shouldn't believe them more than you
don't
sort of believe the reality of them.
Yeah,
exactly.
We live in a fragile world. So
yeah, exactly.
Just accept it as a gift that you've met this person.
Yeah, and I guess it's kind of like the fragile modern day idea is just like, I mean, everyone is going through a certain amount of psychosis in their life, you know? Like, I don't mean that in some super heavy way. I mean, like, there's just small psychoses that we all kind of think things should be different about us, or like think that we should change something, or something's maybe not right, or, you know, like, or we want to change, at least we want like a different kind of life than we have. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone's kind of going through that.
Yes.
So, yeah, anyway.
Well, and you serve as a model for all of us, Paul, with your activism, music, travel.
Yeah, everybody
open
do
heart.
It. Everybody come bike and play music. That'd be good.
Okay, well, if not, just come to Paul's shows.
Yeah.
There's one at 400 Pearson tonight at 8.
Yes.
And then there is one tomorrow at DG's. Do you know what time that starts?
The DG show is early. It's 5.
At 5 o'clock at DG's. And does somebody play after you?
Actually, I think I'm playing second. There's a guy. Man, I'm going to mess up the name if I try to say it because I don't remember it. But yes, there's a guy playing before me who also plays and sings. And then on Sunday at 1 at the Des Moines Arts Festival.
We'll just wander around and find you.
Yeah, it's the acoustic stage. That's where I'm playing.
Ah. And
yeah, it should be cool.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
We love to have you at KHOI.
Good way to start the morning. Some live music.
Yeah.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk with your co-hosts, Gail Seiler and Greta Anderson, myself. Thanks to Kim Weaver, Democratic candidate for the 4th Congressional District in Iowa, who joined us by phone, to the Ames Progressive Alliance and their guest for the conversation about curbing gun violence, and again to Paul Doffing for his live performance.
Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you'll also find contact information and links for the people and places we talked about. Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeest. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations in the community. You can become a member or donate at any time, and you can do that on our website, khoifm.org. Just look for the donate button. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means you can be part of our team of volunteer producers and reporters. If you would like to join the team, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878, or through our website, khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.